Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have two lovely sponsors for you. You have Environments for Humans promoting their CSS Summit. Go to cssummit.com. That's coming up July 15th through 17th. It is an online conference. Save 20% off with Shop Talk Show. We'll tell you more about that later in the show. And CodeShip, who you might recognize because we've had one of the fellows from CodeShip on the show before, but it is a continuous delivery service, continuous delivery made simple. We'll tell you about how it works a little bit later in the show, but if you already know it's cool and like it, use coupon code Shop Talk Show there for 20% too. We'll tell you more about both those things later in the show, but for now, let's kick things off.
Shopomaniacs, this is the Shop Talk Show, a podcast all about frontish-endish web design and development, coming at you live from the Shop Talk Show coast-to-coast studios. I'm Dave Rupert.
Almost none of that stuff.
With me is
true.
Chris Coyer.
Hi, everybody.
We don't have coast. We're kind of border to border, maybe?
Yeah.
Is that instead of coast-to-coast? Can we say that?
My new LLC is called Midwest Coast Studios. No coast.
Houston is the third coast. Boom.
Nailed it.
Feel that?
That voice you just heard that wasn't me or Dave is Katie Kowalson. Hey, Katie. Thanks for joining us.
Hi.
Oh, wrong button. Ta-da. Oh, boy. I'm fired already. Hey.
Hey, the three of us have something in common because we all have, you know, like awards that we just won from the Net Awards. Me and Dave won Podcast of the Year. I won Outstanding Contribution of the Year. Katie won Young Designer of the Year. Isn't that something?
I think so. I mean, good job us.
High five.
Excellent!
Yeah, can you do a triple high five? I feel like fingers might get broken.
Yeah, I think we'd smash hands. And
it was funny. It was
like
cool.
The elbow trick, right?
Yeah, where you just look at the elbow. Mm-hmm. But which elbow?
Yeah,
are you
have to look at the other person's elbow, and it's a perfect high five.
Yeah, I wonder what the science is behind that. It works.
Is that like
though?
When you balance a broom on your hand, and you look at the top of the broom to balance.
I didn't know that.
Hey, thing.
That's a good one. It's a pretty tall broom, I guess. I mean, can't do it inside. Too tall.
All brooms are tall.
We all felt a little weird about it. It was like really cool to win that award because it was like the internet voted for us. So thanks everybody. That's awesome. And then we got shortlisted and then our like a group of like highly respectable people voted for us to win, which is cool. But there's it feels weird to me because I'm like, I don't know. I get my award, I get way too much praise as it is. It feels awkward. Every day people are like, thanks so much for doing what you do. And I'm like, you're welcome. That was really nice of you to say. I like you. But then it happens again and again. And I'm like, I don't deserve this. It was weird.
Well, to your credit, Chris, every time you Google CSS, it's like your little face right there.
Yeah. I'm afraid to change anything on my website because so many people say that it's like, I hope I don't ruin that.
Yeah.
Because that's pretty valuable. How did you feel about your victory, Katie?
Yeah, it's like a little weird because there's so many awesome designers that I'm like, why did that happen? Also, my like portfolio is kind of out of date. That's kind of like surprising and weird. It's like, I don't know. It was really cool. But
yeah, and you got nominated by your friends, right? So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's impossible to win an award without feeling awkward about it. That's okay.
Nope. You just got to suffer through it.
We made it through. Katie works for, at the moment, you're in Austin too. So it's kind of like another Austin party. We had Sam Kapp on last week and Katie lives down there too. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Austin party.
So you were in, so you're like me, you're a Midwest person. Moved around in Ohio a little bit. Cincinnati, Hyperquake. What is Hyperquake? I don't even know. Some agency?
Yeah, it was like a branding agency. They still are. They exist. So that was my first job out of school, was doing branding, not really any websites. And then I was like, hey, I want to do websites. So I tried my hand at freelancing, working with some developers on their products and stuff, and then moved down here to Austin to work at Happy Cog.
Sweet. And it's another agency, so maybe less branding stuff at Happy Cog, but and certainly more webby. That's all Happy Cog really does is web stuff, right?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that, I guess. So if somebody was like, you should do a print campaign for us, they'd be like, nope.
Yeah, I don't really think that's what we do. I think we would be capable of it. I just don't think that's really in our arsenal.
It's like a bunch of you. I don't know. I think a lot of people are aware of Happy Cog just because there's like connections to, I don't know, do a bunch of good stuff. There's a bunch of smart people there. They have a good blog. There's some connection to the history of the web that kind of happens through Happy Cog, which is pretty sweet. Yeah, and there's maybe like 20 some of you now or something like that. And in two different cities, and then you're broken into like little teams, right? So you work on like some project with like a handful of people that, and you might not even touch some other project. Is it big enough that everybody works on the same stuff or not really?
No, each project team has their own set of projects that we're all like juggling together. So I work with the same front end and back end developer and other designer, and we all have the same project manager, which is awesome because then having one dedicated PM means that they know all of your schedules and there's no like conflict of interest of booking someone's time. So it's pretty cool because then we can all figure out our own process because we're completely tailoring that to how we as individuals work together. I'm guessing pretty similar to what Dave, you guys do at Paravel because you just know how to work together.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of our workflow is how we work together. And then sometimes you have to like adapt it to clients. So I'm really interested. Every time I see somebody from Happy Cog Austin, I'm like, hey, how's all that going? Like, just because Happy Cog's what, like 30-ish people or something? I mean, the 20s to 30s numbers. And just I'm like, how do you guys kind of do it? How does it all come together? And so I'm always very interested, and it sounds like this kind of team structure you guys have kind of developed is pretty awesome. It kind of makes it, I don't know, punchy, feisty. You can get stuff done.
Yeah. And it's nice to like get some team spirit. Like we all have our own cheesy team names and we got really into it. My team got matching shirts cause we love each other and we go on family trips. It's pretty fun.
Oh, that's funny.
That's awesome.
You've said, because Dave said before, they're like, you know, I mean, it's always been like, it's the three of you and that's it. The logo for Paravel is a friggin' Triforce, you know? So like, but because there's risk probably in growing any bigger than that, right? You would lose maybe some of that, like knowing how each other work really good and stuff. But I guess it doesn't stop you from being interested to learn how other teams do it, right? Because maybe someday.
Kind of. Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, it's like always like a what if, but then you're just like, oh, but then we'd bring people in and we'd probably make them cry because we just yell at each other. So we should probably just not hire anyone and risk a lawsuit.
But I like that that's like, that's how it can work though. You know, as you scale up, just like have there be more human bodies around, but they're on smaller teams. So you kind of retain the best of both worlds possibly. At least it seems to be working over there. So another connection here is that there was Artifact happened in Austin and you were both at it. And Katie wrote an article at some point that was post Artifact that was kind of like, look at all these tools that like, what was the vibe of that one? The like a not super technical designer CLI toolbox.
Yeah. Cause I'm like, I use these things. I don't necessarily know like the total inner workings of them or anything. Like I can't write my own grunt tests, but I use grunt in my design process. So it was a spinoff of Dave's talk, which was awesome, talking about all those things. And his was obviously from a developer's point of view. So I was trying to make it a little bit more accessible for designers.
Yeah, that's sweet.
I read it. I liked it. It's really good.
So, because that's the world that you occupy at the moment, right? Is that like you're a little bit new to web, but not new to design, right? Yeah. Or okay, yeah. So your day to day is like Photoshop-y. Is
yeah, that, but like, I'm trying to get into browser and stuff sooner, and then that's where like the small team stuff becomes really beneficial because I have gotten really comfortable with the developers that like. With them being more involved in the design process and us all being more involved in each other's process, I've picked up some of like their developer tools and techniques, and we've been able to sort of like finagle things to be, you know, maybe a little less in Photoshop, a little more us working together in browsers and things like that. So that's been cool. So and that's kind of where I've started to pick that up.
Nice. So you did it. You made this jump into like working more with working in the browser and working with straight up nerdier tools. And it's been good, right? I mean, it hasn't been like a regrettable experience. I feel like you never yeah. read that, right? It's something like, I learned to code and I regretted it.
yeah.
Worst choice ever. Yeah.
I wonder. I think we have some questions on this coming up that we could get into. But I'm curious though if you experience the like. Now I think more about like rectangles or like. Did it feel like it hurt your design abilities at all?
In the sense that it's like a little difficult when, say, we're like writing the code, prototyping, and trying to build the wireframes for that, and I'm. Doing that using like that part of my brain to be really like logical and think about the UX and also write code and all of that's cool and that informs my design. But then I feel like it's really hard to make that jump from being in that mode to then being in the more like creative, intuitive graphic design mode. So it's not that I think it hinders it at all. It just makes it a little bit more difficult to like go back and forth between those.
Oh, that's if that a makes nice sense. Way to think about it. Yeah, I find that to be true too, right? It's like you maybe even literally need some like time and space between those two activities. It's hard to just like close one program and open another program and be like just as good, just as killing it over there.
Mm-hmm.
That's worth an article, really. I can't do that either, and I didn't even really think about that I can't do that until you mentioned it. But yeah, I suck at one when I switch to the other one. Maybe there's like – you need like exactly 17 minutes and like one sandwich in between. What's up with drama this week? Was there any – there was the protesters outside Google I.O., but it was like I'm not even sure that I care very much about that. But unless you do.
Yeah. Protesters outside Google I.O. is interesting. It's just about how their, I guess, gentrification or Googleification of San Francisco. I'm not there, so it's really hard to comment on. So maybe we should probably pass for the benefit of the internet. But what I want to talk about, but what I can pundit about is, did you see the Google Cardboard? Did you see that?
I read the top few paragraphs of it today. You fold up some stuff. It turns your phone into a virtual reality thing somehow. But the point is that it does it inexpensively, right? It doesn't need a lot of equipment to work. Is it?
Yeah, it's basically you put your phone in a cardboard box that is really close to your eyeballs, and it's like an Oculus Rift, which is I just wonder if they're like – this is me, right? I just wonder if they're just like, hey, Facebook, you just bought Oculus for $3 billion and we can replace your business with a piece of cardboard. Like, you're on notice. I just wonder if they were just being that, like,
certainly.
That, like,
of course.
Hey, by the way, ours is 25 cents and yours is $300. Like, I think that's like some super deep hot drama. And then, you know, I think actually like taking drama out of the equation. So let's close bracket drama. Google launched some kind of cool stuff. I've been actually watching the I/O stuff this morning, but like they have created this like design language, for the new Android, stuff. And then, on Polymer web components and stuff like that, they've started kind of implementing these kind of examples. Like it's like their, I think they call it like their primary example or something like that. but the kind of design language and how to build a website, like the advice that Google is giving is like kind of super good and cool. I'm super like impressed with what they're doing. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but they have this.
Are you talking about like google.com/design?
Google.com/design web fundamentals is another thing they have, which is kind of like it's they're like, how do you build a modern website? You have multi-device tools, you know, like inspectors and all that, multi-device layouts, responsive web design, forms and user input. Like it's all about tapping, image, audio, and video, only use stuff that loads fast, optimizing performance, device access, you know.
So this is more than a pattern library. It's like they're actually like putting their money where their mouth is and have some like reasoning and fundamentals behind it and are doing it. Is it, why are people more impressed by this than like any other pattern library?
Well, I think it's like, it's not so much the pattern library. It's not like, oh, I'm going to use Google's Bootstrap. I don't think that's it. I think it's just kind of just how they're piecing everything together is really sharp. Like they have this web starter kit based on those web fundamentals that you can download. And it's like a HTML5 boilerplate with style basically. But then it has a style guide attached to it, almost like a pattern library, pattern lab, like a Brad Frost pattern lab attached to it. It's like just a one pager of the style guide, the pattern library. And it's just kind of cool. It's like, wow, they're doing things in a kind of like really nice way. It's very inspirational, I guess is what I want to say. And there, that google.com/design where it talks about material design, there's a lot of good points about animation and stuff like that in there. So it's definitely worth checking out, in my opinion. I think they're doing really well. Katie may have an opinion because she's a designer by trade.
I saw my Twitter feed blowing up with all of it, but I actually have not checked that out yet. Bad designer.
Oh, we'll wait. I'm just kidding.
I'm mostly surprised how much people cared about it. It all looks very nice to me. I don't disagree on any particular point, but I don't know. I don't feel particularly emotional about it or something. Just like, yeah, it looks like some good ideas or something. I don't know. Like, it doesn't seem like it will affect my life very much. I was kind of interested in how they were showing off some like how tabs in a browser and native apps are kind of all mingled together a little bit. That's kind of like a win for the web, possibly. Looked like, I don't know, like the people are saying it blurred the line between a web app and a native app. I'm like, well, that's nice. Good. They already do that, so you might as well do it UI-wise, too. Let's move into some questions. I was going to point out that I wrote a post. A family member wrote to me and asked about help with their website, which is a classic scenario that I'm sure we've all been in a million times where, you know, you're like, you should help them because you're family, but you feel like it's a little obnoxious and like actually sometimes helping your family sucks and like what, but the chance, you know, usually what they need is they have a small business of some kind. That's like the classic family need thing. Happens to me all the time. There's lots of people in my family that have the small business and I wrote them an email back that just said like, just use something else. That's not me. Use a website builder tool. This is something that we've brought up on Shop Talk a bunch of times. Use Squarespace or Verb or WordPress or Wix or whatever. Like, I don't even care. I don't even, you know, like there's ones that I kind of like, but I don't even care what I like. Find one that you like and put your website on it because it's going to take a very not particularly long time for you to do. It's going to look good. It's going to be responsive. You can change it whenever you want. It's easy to upload photos. There's a million reasons to use these things. I probably won't even do as good of a job as one of these websites would do for you if I hand did it. I mean, that's debatable or whatever. And I published this article on CSS Tricks. I can put a link in the show notes. It's called About That Small Business Website of Yours. And it's just my opinion, you know, whatever. I just, that's the thing. And it wasn't particularly dramatic. Lots of people feeling differently about it in the comments, but that's the point of a good classic discussion. Anyway, let's roll that into the first question here by David Hunt, who says, what is your feeling on the use of build-it-yourself websites creators like Wix or Squarespace? I work full-time as a web designer developer and do a lot of freelance work. And I feel like I keep hearing more and more about these sites that allow, quote-unquote, the average person to build a custom website without knowing any code. I can't help but think, is this taking away from potential business for a web designer developers? What are your thoughts? What do you feel about these things, Katie? There's tons of different ones. You're a web designer. Do you feel like your job is in jeopardy because Squarespace exists?
No. I think that, like, I've done the same thing. I've had friends, like, because I went to art school, that are, you know, painters or illustrators or someone that doesn't do design or web. And they're like, make me a portfolio site. And, like, that's something so simple that, like, it's so much easier to just have them, like, make a cargo collective or one of those things. So, like, the use of those things being those, like, more smaller type people, like small businesses or artists or whatever, that just want an online presence but don't necessarily need, like, a really robust user experience and all of these things that, like, people that actually do this would bring their expertise too, and making, like, a really nice website. Those are, like, that's the work that I want to be doing, is, like, the more interesting problems to solve and not just, like, getting something up on the internet. And so I think that there will always be plenty of work to go around. And if that's what works best for the small business or the whoever that just wants a small site, then they should go for it. And I think they're a great tool for that.
Yeah, so if they, you know, if they didn't exist, I don't know, like, I like, you said the word better, you know, like, this might actually, like, be better than what somebody can do. I would agree with that, too. You know, when I wrote to my uncle about this, it was kind of like, literally, you could hire, you know, I don't know, is it degrading to say some kid or whatever? You know, you can just find some web designer on Craigslist or whatever, because your budget isn't $50,000 for this, certainly. Your budget's probably like $1,000 or $2,000 or something like that. That's money for a small business, absolutely, but it's not that much money. You know, it's not, you're not going to get a designer for 2 months on a project for $2,000, you know? It's just, that's just not the way this works out. And so if they do build something for you for your even smaller budget than that, you're just going to get, like, a little bleh, you know, you're going to get, like, a flat site. You know, it might look nice and custom and, you know, be a nice looking design, but then it's like it doesn't have a CMS on the back end of it to update, or if it doesn't have, you know, cool drag and drop image uploading tools and stuff. But for like $8 a month or whatever, one of these sites, you can get all of that. You know, it's like, it's actually like the result for less money is probably better. And it doesn't, you know, it just, I don't know. I don't think it hurts the designers out there in the wild. I think it frees them up to do better work.
I think, to your point, like, if you have a budget of like $1,000 for the website, use the, what, like $8 a month or whatever, take that out and then put the rest into, like, getting a designer to make you really nice branding or something that will then make your, you know, there quote you unquote go. Generic template stand out, because it, you know, a lot of these sites are looking the same anyways. Make your branding what stands out.
Heck yeah. Now that's good advice. You know, don't take your $1,000 and depend on, you know, give it to somebody to float left, float right. Give it to somebody to, you know, make your brand actually something. Now that's good advice. Oh, what do we got, Dave? Should we do a sponsor? Do another question?
Let's do a sponsor. Get out of the way. Make sure it's done.
Sure. I actually do, because I have the tab open and I'm looking right at it. We had, Florian Motlick from CodeShip. This is CodeShip.io on episode number 83, and we talked a lot about continuous integration, continuous deployment, and that stuff. They call CodeShip continuous delivery. That's our little slogan, continuous delivery made simple. And I guess that's the combination of those two things. Continuous integration is every time you commit code to a repository, a lot of us work in Git or Subversion or whatever, or Git, let's be serious, right? Continuous integration is like, okay, now automatically run all of my test suites. Every test that I've written, whether they're front-end tests, integration tests, you know, whatever they happen to be, just run them and tell me what the results are. And then continuous deployment being if all that stuff passes, then just move it out. Move it out to the website. Move it out live. Actually deploy it. And then let me know somehow. So that's what CodeShip helps with. And it's pretty cool. It's a little weird to wrap your head around because it's kind of like a, I don't know, it just helps you with little, you're like, what part does CodeShip actually help? So this is my attempt at explaining. It's like, let's say you have a Ruby on Rails application and the code for it is on GitHub and you host it on Heroku. Like CodeShip, that isn't a part of any of that. But what it helps is that like it hooks up with GitHub. So it sees when you've made a new commit and it automatically runs your tests against that new commit. And if those tests pass, then it pushes that stuff to Heroku. So it sits in between that like GitHub and Heroku step. And it like helps you run your tests because it can run them in a bunch of different browsers. So it runs the kind of virtual browser space for you and stuff. And it, you know, it works with Ruby on Rails apps. It works with Node.js apps, PHP apps. It works with any of that stuff. And it works with Bitbucket or GitHub. And then where you deploy it to can be anything too. It works with Amazon Web Services, Heroku, whatever. So imagine you have a Node.js app that's hosted on Bitbucket that gets deployed to Amazon Web Services. It works with that too. Or a PHP app that's on GitHub that you deploy with custom Capistrano scripts that's hosted on Rackspace, you can do all that too. And like if your tests pass or fail, you can have CodeShip give you a notification like in your HipChat or whatever, or send you an IM or an IRC message or whatever. That's what CodeShip does. It runs your tests for you, and if they pass, does the deployment for you, and either way sends you notifications for this stuff. So it's a pretty cool thing. And you can actually, you know, because it's a web app, you can, you know, log in and give it access to your GitHub and, you know, kind of set it all up from the web, which is pretty cool. CodeShip.io/shoptalk. Use coupon code ShopTalkShow for 20% off discount for your first 3 months of any plan. So that's CodeShip. And if you want to know more about that stuff, you might as well go back to episode 83 and listen to that stuff. Let's do another question.
All right. Question time.
You okay,
Yawn. Buddy? Yeah, I'm choking on a fingernail. No, I just... All right, here we go. Yawn Juniag writes in, recently, I was asked to create a page design for a client. Just the visual design, no code. I thought it would be easy, but after spending an hour and a half creating a table in Illustrator, I'm yearning for some basic HTML, CSS. Seriously, try putting zebra stripes on a table in Illustrator. Given that this is a responsive design, any changes I make have to be copy and pasted across 5 different artboards for 5 different breakpoints. Yikes. This is a huge pain. The development world has a pretty firmly established the don't repeat yourself mantra, but it seems the design world hasn't gotten this memo. Ooh, 2 snaps up. Are there any design tools that you guys know of that take into account things like separation of style and content or modular?
Why don't
components?
We just take this right to Katie, who, like, you design websites, you design responsive websites, and you're, you know, you work in web stuff, but are primarily a designer. How do you deal with this situation? You know, the like, I gotta think about multi-device design.
This goes back to what we were talking about a little bit ago about altering your process a little bit and bringing in more of that developer sort of process and tools to your design process. So I wouldn't necessarily say that like there's any particular tools that like, you know, could do this, but it's more just breaking out your process a little bit. And whether that means you just design stuff enough to get either like buy-off from the client or get your ideas out visually and then bring that into code, and then you can start iterating on your designs and making some of those decisions in the browser rather than Photoshop. So then, you know, you're not having five artboards. You just have the code that's already responsive with your idea, and then you can start to really finesse those as you go with the code, which it sounds like the person asking the question is already familiar with code because he really wanted to get back into code and not Illustrator. So it sounds like a perfect place for you to start, you know, merging your design and development processes. And
yeah, that's right. So like maybe like because Jan is the person who wrote in the question already knows some code stuff and found themselves yearning for it, as they said, which I totally get. You know, sometimes you like start in photo, I start in Photoshop and I'm like screwing around with a few things and I'm like, nope, enough. And you know, like I get frustrated with the like something going on in Photoshop or it's too finicky or whatever. And then I just am like, but it doesn't matter. It's not like I'm in handcuffs here. It's not like anybody's telling me you cannot use any other tools than this. I've made the choice to work in Photoshop and that's it forever. You just be like, okay, this is starting to get frustrating over here. I've already made some strides. I kind of have a thing going here. I'm going to move this over to code because more code is more efficient at this particular thing that I'm doing. And then if you're like, I'm starting to feel stifled by code, then you can move back. And, you know, I would think that you could, like, it's a process thing. Like you said, you could just move back and forth a little bit more.
Yeah, like if you have something coded and you're like, oh, this is getting like way wonky at this breakpoint, you can then jump back into Photoshop, just mock up that one little module or something, and then bring that again back into code. So it's really more of just a working in conjunction with both design and code. And I don't write production code like at all. And that's just, then if you don't know that, that's working with the person who is writing that code to have those conversations and figure out these things together. And, you know, when stuff's going on in code or Photoshop.
So would you hear when Jan was like, I have five different artboards for five different breakpoints and I like maintain them meticulously across all that stuff. That's probably just not somewhere. That's not a predicament you find yourself in.
Yeah, that's not really a good use of people's time unless those were like severe problems at those five particular breakpoints that you have to solve in design that are just like wildly going wrong. But just to sort of see how these things are playing out, I don't think you necessarily need to do that unless you see how it's reacting in the browser and then see that it's wonky and weird.
That's cool. So you think of these design tools as like a problem-solving space and like an exploratory space, not necessarily like a final artwork, final dot PSD.
Yes.
I was going to just mention there is this brand new design tool. I forget the name of it, but basically it's like a designer can just go into work and sit next to a developer and it makes responsive web design a lot
easier. Oh, is it a chair?
It's two chairs connected by a piece of wood. And it's revolutionary and it's taking web design to the next level.
I also would think, to the point, even though that's amazing and you should make a GIF of it, that I would think that design tool makers are thinking about this stuff a little bit. You know, there's definitely like sometimes I'll mess around in Keynote, and the new Keynote has like you can't even put text on a Keynote unless it has like a style, like a character style, essentially, And then because you work with them across different, you know, pages of your Keynote presentation, you can change them all at once or whatever and have master slides that change them all at once and stuff. There's certainly character styles and paragraph styles in all of the Adobe products, I think. I think it's made its way across all of them. So there is things, you know, they are thinking about this stuff a little bit. There are ways that you can make things a little easier. I don't know if there's table styles or not, but maybe there is. I think that like if you find it impossible to keep things like, I don't know, like there are tools to help with this in design software too. It's not unique to CSS. Yeah. But I get it. I find myself reaching for it too. Let's do another question. We have one here from James Finn who writes, I'm a noob. I love designing in HTML and CSS, but my creativity is stunted because I can't program. So James can write front-end code, but not in programming. I'm sure he's thinking of as back-end stuff. Which language should I learn first? People I really respect say Python, but I like designing for the web, particularly UX and UI. It's getting a little muddy here, James. Shouldn't I learn PHP or JavaScript, as they are GPLs more meant for the web? I don't know what GPL means in that context. Graphic programming. Although I know it depends on what I want to do when I grow up, which is design and build cool stuff for the browser. So there's a lot going on there. James, good work at learning design and HTML and CSS, kind of looking to take his next step. The first sentence he says, but my creativity is stunted because I can't program. When I read that, I felt like I've had that feeling early on too, is that I'm starting to develop some design skill. I'm starting to feel a little bit more powerful on the web because I know HTML and CSS, but like I got this idea and I can't pull it off because I can't program. And that's like a weird place to be. And James is like, my feel stifled here. What should I learn next? Did you ever have that feeling, Dave?
I mean, I came at it at like the, like, I want to make HTML. I like to make web pages with HTML, CSS. And then they're like, oh, I need a database for something. Or like, you're like, I want to do something dynamic, like tell the time, or, you know, so it's kind of baby step in. If your creativity is stunted, there's two kinds of that, right? Like, it's like, you can't go big enough or build the application you're looking for. Then if that's the feeling you're having, then you maybe need to learn a backend language like PHP or Python, or maybe Node.js, but let's just say PHP or Python. It honestly, it doesn't really matter which you use.
There was a part of the question where PHP's, he says, like, people I respect say Python, but I like designing for the web. Well, Python is absolutely a web language. In fact, I don't know that it is anything else. So you definitely couldn't go wrong there. And definitely PHP and Python occupy the same kind of space. You know, they're helping you do back-end stuff. Whereas JavaScript is, you know, I mean, I know Node.js muddies the water a little bit here. But if you don't know any JavaScript but like the HTML and CSS, adding JavaScript to that really is the trifecta up there. So you might consider that. And it says, you want to build stuff for the browser? Well, yeah, JavaScript is the deal. Then you're going to need to know that. That's a vital component to it if you're going to be building complete web apps or whatever. You get the gist of his question, right, Katie? What do you think? Have you ever felt that way? You reached out to learn more about the web, in which, I don't know, there's some similarities there, isn't there?
Yeah, I guess I'm like most confused about the question. Like, I want to design and I feel like not knowing backend is stifling my creativity because maybe, I don't know, I've never felt like I need to know Python to design better. So I guess it depends on like what you want to do. If you want to like completely build it yourself, yeah. But as a designer, I think you can totally get by without knowing a backend language.
Yeah.
I would agree. Yeah. Like maybe JavaScript is what James needs to kind of look at, just because that's where the effects are, like making things swoop across the page or come in on scroll or those kind of designy things. Designy.
I'm feeling like James wants to be a one man build anything I want shop, and he's not there yet and wants to be. And thus you might need to add a back end language, but to Katie's point, you don't have to do that. You don't have to be a one man show that can build everything. You can have a perfectly happy career knowing some of how to build websites. And in fact, the vast majority of us, that's the case.
I agree with you.
I agree.
I'm a
good. I like being agreed with.
Two for Chris.
Woo! Nailed it. Zing of the day.
All right, Renee Ruiz writes in. Responsive web design has done a lot of great things for all the web, but sometimes sharing of a single code base for all the different breakpoints makes things tricky. I usually ask my designers to avoid situations that would require building a component in two different ways across screen sizes. The navigation in the header is usually one of the areas for this discussion, where a design basically requires toggling of visibility between the two different menu systems. So you'll have like menu system A on mobile and menu system B on desktop or like convention, right? It's tough to explain how the source order of elements dictates the flow to my designers and how things should be reusable. But they'll often point to other existing websites that go against what I say. What are your thoughts on the subject? Am I being too much of a stickler or should I stand my ground? So Renee really appreciates source order and a single code base, but being asked to do things differently. Katie?
I think Renee is being too much of a stickler. I think you should not just say like, no, I can't do that. And like, you know, firmly stand your ground. You know, if your designers aren't really understanding stuff, you should educate them and you can work together. And like, what is the actual problem you guys are trying to solve together? Like, is the project's problem dependent on, you know, having the two different menus and things like that? It's all in the best interest of the project, and you guys, the designer and developer, should be working together to find the best solution, whether that is, you know, not necessarily like your perfect way of coding it or their perfect way of designing it. You both need to give and take, and I think you should be a little bit more open to other
options. It seems like there's a little bit more dictation from on high on how to do things here than not as much give and take. That's kind of how I felt about it too, is that Renee knows, I don't know, they have something in their mind about how something can go down, and the menu system is a good way to think of it, right? Like Dave said, there's menu A and there's menu B, and Renee's like, okay, well, there's no way that we can rejigger this desktop version of a header to mobile. We need to design it twice. It needs to be two different sets of HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, and that's a bummer, because then what we're going to have to do is like display none one and display block the other one and swap them out, and they're both going to have to be on the page, and that seems so janky and weird that I don't like that. So let's never get ourselves into that position ever, because that would be a problem. I feel like that's maybe where the mind is going there, and it's like, well, okay, that doesn't mean you should just be like, I now command you to never design anything like that ever. That just sounds gross. It's like, maybe you should, there should be some give and take, and you should figure out how you can handle that. Just because you have in your mind one how you think that might have to go down doesn't mean that that's necessarily the way it is. You know, there can be some JavaScript that runs that can figure out the type of situation that you're in, and can because the JavaScript can manipulate the DOM, it can smurf things around and change it up if it needs to. Or there could be some REST stuff going on, which is kind of some server side version of responsive web design. You could serve a different header in one place. It doesn't mean they both have to be on the page at the same time. There's often a million different ways to kind of work out a system like this. So I wouldn't try to be like, you know, dogmatic or whatever, be like, you don't design anything that would put us in this bad situation. Know what I mean? That's what I felt. Do you think Renee's being too much of a stickler, Dave? Or do you think that it's important for somebody like in that position of power to be kind of dictating rules to the team?
I am like, I'm probably like a purist, like borderline Puritan in this code aspect, like that you want it to be super, super clean and like super non-repetitive. But is it, are you blocking the project because of this? Maybe you shouldn't. Kind of where I draw the line is like, I mean, I've gotten comps where the desktop and the tablet and the mobile are all completely incompatible, to where it's like three websites you're having to juggle. That I find unacceptable. So it's sort of like, if it's just one component, I mean, like maybe sit down and do a chart, like a scale or whatever, of like pros and cons. Like pro, it gets it out faster. That's worth five weights. And then cons, it repeats markup. That's like three weights or something like that. And invest in a scale, I believe, is what my sage advice.
Also, that cool new tool of the table and chair that you mentioned earlier.
What's that? Oh, yes.
Looping that back.
Yeah, if you buy, so you can, I'm selling them. So for
How much you want?
20 grand.
20. Yeah, you might as well shoot high because, you know, you get Microsoft as a client, then you're rich for life.
These are designers. These are designers. They're loaded. I've seen their glasses and their Pinterest. So you you get a couple of chairs from this package I'm selling in a big plank of wood. And
I wonder if that will be a job at some point. It's like the somebody who you know, that knows responsive design, but knows how to do all the trickiest stuff, like a RWD trickster.
Responsive trickster. Yeah.
They bring you in at the last minute.
Updating.
You do all the hard stuff. Like, what am I going to do with this search form? It absolutely doesn't fit in the header. Be like, don't worry. I know how to slide it in from the top with a swipe or some crazy
shit. Then I come in like parachuting, wearing like with a keyboard gun. It's like,
shooting keys. You know where I'll bet there'll be some CSS trickster stuff? At the CSS Summit. It's coming up. It's coming up July 15th through 17th. It's a 3-day online conference. Go to CSSSummit.com. If you decide to go to it, which you probably should, you should use coupon code ShopTalkShow for 20% off any ticket of it. Like I said, it's 3 days. You just view it. You just do it in a browser. So you can just do it from anywhere, which is pretty cool. Lots of people, lots of talks. It's really going to be good. We told you about it last week, which should promote people. But what we said was that you can win a free ticket for it, by sending us a question with hashtag summit in it. And 11 of you did it. Good work.
We've never had 11.
Yeah, that's good.
That's amazing.
And I said, bring back the nerd too, you know, like really.
No, we're bringing back the nerd. I felt like everyone did due diligence and was bringing back the nerd here.
Our pseudo random number generator, 1 through 11, and I'm going to click it. I got number 4, so 4 from the top. 1, 2, 3, 4. Jeff Lau. Jeff Lau is in allow. Is this the pronunciation for it? So maybe we let's see. I don't know if this is a good question for the thing, but we'll do your question for sure at some point. And congratulations on winning a ticket. I will send you information on how to do that. For the rest of you, you didn't win, so you have to buy a ticket.
But you get a discount. That's the consolation prize.
Go to CSSSummit.com and use the discount ShopTalkShow.com. Particularly good for those of you who live in like Australia, and it's hard to get to, you know, the U.S. for conferences. I know that there's conferences down there too, but you know what I mean. You can visit. You can go from anywhere. All right, let's do some more questions.
Here we go. Andrew Threadgill calls or draws in. Oh boy. Andrew Threadgill writes in, for smaller websites, teeny tiny websites, I find it often difficult to collect quality content from businesses that I am designing a website for. These website budgets are usually small, therefore content writer may not be practical. Can you explain your process on collecting data or steering customers in the right direction when it comes to providing quality content?
Classic question, right? I think I put it in here because I'm kind of interested in what like agency work at a place like Happy Cog, when you work with a client, where does that, is that like super early on in the discussions? Do you like have content strategy people, or like how do you, have you like solved this problem?
Yeah, I mean, well, not that we've solved it, but we always start with content. Like that's pretty much the basis of everything that we do, right? Like from the wireframes to design. So we do sometimes work with some freelance content strategists, particularly for sites that have like a lot of content that they need to try and organize and surface in different ways and things like that. So if you're not really starting with the content, I think you're doing a disservice to your client.
That, so it's like dang near step one for y'all, because like how would you design without it? Kind of, is it like, does it steer it that far?
Yeah,
it does seem a little weird. Yeah, go ahead.
I don't feel like I would be able to comfortably make like a design recommendation without knowing what the content would be or like what we're trying to achieve on this page or on the site as a whole. Like, I feel like that would just be really irresponsible to be like, this is how it should look, when I don't know what content or like what you find important or what you're trying to do.
Yeah, that would just be weird. That would be weird. Branding, maybe. You know, like, hey, could you please design an icon set for us? We need these 12 icons. Sure. But, like, I want to, could you design my website? Don't worry, I'll get you the content at the last minute. What?
Especially if it's like a brochure site, as they are sometimes called.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you wouldn't like just last minute get content for your mailing campaign.
So I know we didn't answer you, Andrew, but we are saying that the onus might be on you a little bit here. Now that you're in this bad position on this particular site, you know, best of luck, I don't know. But you might want to start involve content early on so that you never really find yourself in this situation. Be like, okay, I want to design a website for you. What kind of content do you have? What content can I help you with? You know, so I don't think it's inconceivable that a web designer can help with copy a little bit. I don't think you need to totally wash your hands of it. You might be useful there. You certainly read a lot of it and work with a lot of it. Don't cut yourself too short. Doesn't mean you have to write every bit of content on their site, but you can certainly guide them to the right place or help them a little bit.
So I have two tips, if you don't mind. I would make sure your upfront percentage to start work, like maybe set that really high so they are like financially invested in it, you know, like so that they're like, okay, I have these guys working on my kitchen, and they're like 50% upfront, and I'm like, ooh, okay, so we're doing this. This is going, you know. So that might be a thing, like where you're just like, okay, like I'm going to get you financially invested, and then like step two, hit them with an email with a Word doc in it, and make it really easy for them. You know, like a Word doc that they just, you know, what is the most important thing about your business? You know,
nice.
What products, kind of products do you sell? Like just you have to get it right. Like this is all user experience, kind of like on a micro level, but like your client needs to feel like they can accomplish this task you're asking them to do in 5 minutes. And it may take an hour, it may take 100 meetings on their side or whatever, but like it make it feel like it's a 5 minute exercise. Like just type this out and then you have something to start with, and they'll most certainly want to change it later, but at least you have something to start with. And then once you get the content, I can get going, you know, right after they cut you a check, like for a big check, you know, like then you're like, hey, you need to now fill this out and then I can start. And then they're like, oh, wow. So I'm in it now because I paid a bunch of money. So
clever. I love it.
And it's not illegal, like what I just said. That's like you can do that successfully. You know, I'm not I hope I didn't sound like a scam artist. I'm just saying, like, that's a thing you can do. So, all right, I'm done. Are you guys done? No, one more question. Sure. Okay. All right. Are you ready, Katie?
I am.
Here we go. Sam Tietjen writes in. I've got this really bad habit of nudging things in my design. 2 pixels up, adding them here, adding them there, and then repeat till insanity. For font sizes, I make sure I've got a scale first. For vertical rhythm, things get a little weird though. If I've got a logo above a header, above a paragraph, is there an easy way to keep a consistent number of pixels between them, taking into consideration the varying line height? I feel like I'm missing something basic. I'm always struggling to get that white space just right. How do you approach white space?
There's two parts. I think the interesting part is the what is it? Is that nudgy thing design, or can you go insane doing that? And then like that's separate from the vertical rhythm and type thing, which we've kind of beaten to death around here, I feel like, and we always come to the same answer, which is don't worry tremendously about that. Like make sure your type looks good primarily, and that yes, there's space around stuff and it works and stuff. Okay, vertical rhythm is more important in a kind of a print design world when you see a little bit more than you do on the web, so maybe we could skip that part a little bit. But what about the, like, unless you have like deep thoughts on that, Katie, feel free to take over.
You pretty much covered that.
But how do you keep vertical rhythm in your designs? Do you draw a bunch of horizontal lines and then, but if something changes, you just redraw all those lines? How do you tend to kind of keep, or do you not really bother with it? Or
yeah, I think I probably have like a more fluid process, like we were talking about earlier, between like jumping around between Photoshop and code and stuff. So I don't get like as super rigid and rulesy about things, just kind of like get stuff like almost there, get it into the browser, then like start, I guess, nudging the things around in code, like adding some more M's and padding and stuff once it's actually in the browser.
Do you have a feeling on like how Sam designs with this like nudgy, pixely, movie aroundy stuff? Is that just, I think some people might say that's just what designing is. And then some people are like, stop, go to bed. Are you like,
I would say like I used to design like that for sure. Like when I was first starting like to try and design websites, and I would lay out everything like so perfect, and I would be like, okay, I have nudged this thing to death, and I think my little designer eyes finally deem this like valid for the web. And then a developer would take it and like write it up, and then it would look pretty much not really like 80% like what I spent all that time nudging anyways. And then we would have to like have, you know, nudge stuff together in code. So it kind of then was like, oh wait, moving that one pixel like didn't really make or break this design. You know, obviously you want stuff to line up and you want things to follow a grid, but I try to like approximate things and not get like super strict about it and just be like, yes, that is pretty much where I want that thing. We'll see what it looks like in the browser and then decide from there how that's looking.
Yeah, that sounds like healthy. Mm-hmm. I guess that I was like begging for that answer, but that's what I felt like kind of, is that you can be wasting time before you get to the browser anyway. And then even if you are in the browser, like there's probably time better spent than that kind of thing. Although, you know, it's hard to say, you know, like once in a while, look at a button that's like, that should literally be one pixel up. So you should probably move it. Mm. I don't know. But if you keep...
Yeah. Different fonts will mess up with line height and all that too. So you got to be careful with that too. Like if you just change your font stack, womp womp.
Yeah.
That's the number one thing that I do on CodePen is, or that like reminds me of this anyway, is that like, let's say you have like a 20 pixel by 20 pixel little image, which is really common at like avatars or whatever, and you want to line it up centered next to a username, like a classic thing, you know, like not baselines, but like centered, you know, like the text is smaller than 20 pixels high. So you think you could just rock out like image vertical or vertical align middle on it or whatever, but it's never quite right. It's never right. You always have to go like image position relative top negative one pixels or whatever and like yank it up just one friggin' thing to get it to work. Does that happen to you? I don't know. It's like every day.
Well, so one thing I've kind of been thinking about and stuff like that is kind of treating the HTML more as the source of truth than the PSD, just because there's like, the PSD is a totally different rendering engine that is not the web, you know? So if like you kind of, it's kind of easy in browser to get somewhat consistent line height and padding and stuff. It's like you just set a variable to like vertical rhythm in your SAS or something. And then you could just use that variable as your padding or like vertical rhythm times two or times 1.5. So you can kind of like keep a vertical rhythm there in code fairly easily. So maybe that's the thing. Maybe don't treat the PSD quite as the canonical final design in kind of the code. Yeah.
Is that your Book Apart book? A source of truth.
That's my new Book Apart. The Source of Truth. A Book Apart book. Hey, Mandy, Jason, if you're listening, give me a call. Hey.
Do you have a final thought, Katie?
Oh, yeah. I was just going to add in that the PSDs are like, you want them to look good and perfect when you present it to the client. Like, you don't want to have like some wonky line height and stuff like that when you're like presenting it. But that's kind of like where the tool of the PSD sort of ends, is getting that like buy off and having it be like professional and polished and then move to the browser.
Done.
Ta-da. Well, we should wrap it up. Katie, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. For two things, for those who aren't following you and giving you money, how can people follow you, give you money, learn more about you? And then what's the one thing you'd like to plug? What's the big thing that you want to plug now?
I guess I will plug my first talk at CSS DevConf in October. That would be cool for people to go to. Oh,
yeah. Awesome. And then how can people follow you?
Katie Kowalson on Twitter, which you won't know how to spell, but...
Well, we'll link to it in the show notes.
It's
Kowalson. Is it really that hard? Do people just destroy it? I'm sure they do, right? Because they destroy anything.
Yeah, I get Kevorkian. I get... the worst...
I thought it
was... The worst I ever had was Bobalson. And I'm like, where did these bees come from?
I thought it was Vaklavik for a long time. I probably called you that.
Is that like
face.
A delicious Greek yogurt kind of dessert?
Yeah, Vaklavik yogurt. It's got honey in it.
That's a good one.
But it's Kova like Nova with a K, L like L, Sin like Cincinnati. Boom.
I never thought of the CIN as Sin like Cincinnati, but good observation.
Lived there.
If you need personal brand consulting, hit me up.
We'll mention that again later because Environments for Humans are our sponsor and they put on CSS DevConf. And so we will make sure to mention that again as we get closer to that's coming up in October. Thanks for being on.
All right. Thanks everyone for coming out. Thanks for coming into the chat room and thanks for following us on Twitter. Thanks for voting us in the 5 stars on the hooba dabba dooba dabba Chris
ShopTalkShow.com.
Just